This is an interview with Paul Guido for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program regarding Latonia, Ohio, by Paul Mers at his home, Mr. Guido's home, 366 Summer Street in Latonia, on November 19th, 1981, at approximately 3:30 in the afternoon. Mr. Guido, can I call you Paul?
Right,
okay.
By all means.
Paul, what I'd like you to do is tell me where you were born. Tell me about your parents and your brothers and sisters. Tell me about your early family life.
I was born here in Latonia. Family life is a family life going where there are seven of us children. My father, he had immigrated from Italy. The first time he was over here was in 1800 and I don't recall the year. He immigrated. He came here in this country, and he immediately went to work at the coke ovens, where he packed. In fact, he worked there all his life until he died. My mother, she also came from Italy. You see, I haven't the date on it. That's the thing I don't have.
Was it in the other century, in the 1800s?
No, my dad, he had originally come over in the 18th, in 1890-some, but he had previously been married, see. So his wife died, first wife died, and he returned to Italy, and that's where he met my wife, my mother.
Okay.
And he married her, and then they came to this country again. That's how it was.
Was he married to a woman in Italy the first time?
Right.
And he came here and left her there?
Yes, and she died.
So he went back to take care of whatever business that might have created.
Like that. And that's what I was told originally, but I never knew her. I mean, they never spoke much about her.
Okay.
Because it wasn't a very long marriage, I presume. That's what it was. So they never did bring it up in the family. Then we were, as youngsters, see, we lived right where the Cherry Valley Blast Furnace had company homes on either side of the Sportsman Club, that dam. They used to call it the Cherry Valley Dam.
Okay.
On the one side, is what they used to call the White Row. That's the upper part. On this other side, to the north, it was called the Red Row. There were homes, frame homes, but they're red, painted red.
No, it was a dam directly in between them?
Right.
I walked back there to see the dam.
You see it?
Someone else mentioned it.
Yeah, it's directly in between. And the blast furnace was to the north.
To the north of?
To the north of the dam.
Okay.
Across the railroad.
Okay. So it would have went Red Row, Dam, White Row, Blast Furnace.
No. White Row, the Dam, and the Red Row. The Furnace and the Red Row.
Okay.
The Red Row was right alongside the railroad.
The Erie.
The Erie, right?
The Red Row, okay.
And there were, see, how many homes were there? There were about, there's still one. Johnny Roos's old home. That's one of the old original Red Row.
Okay, it sits on that hill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who lives there now? Let's see. He rented it out to somebody. I forget who has it. Well, anyway, that's the one of the original homes, but it had been remodeled.
Okay.
Now on the other side, there's one home left there too. I think Char's lived there. The last one.
I know where that's at. It sits back from the road.
Right, the last home out.
Yes,
right.
I know exactly where that's at.
That's Charge.
Okay, I learned something already.
That was one of the original White Road homes.
Okay.
Then they see that, oh, as kids we were always playing around, oh shoot, down around the Cherry Valley Dam, and we do a lot of fishing there. Come in, Bob. The coffee's ready.
Hi, Mr. How are you?
Hi, how
Paul.
Are you?
I'm fine.
The coffee's ready. You want to get ready to put it on? Get a cup out for Mr. Mercer.
Paul.
Paul, too.
Paul.
All right, Paul.
Thank you.
That's why I like to call people, too. I want them to call me the same way. I don't know why. That Mr. Business don't agree with me.
Oh, we're alike in that.
Huh?
We're alike in that.
No.
Certainly.
Did you live in the white row?
No, I lived in the red row.
Okay. So you would have lived over approximately where Johnny Roos's house is in that area?
Well, practically. When you get down from Johnny Roos's, well, no, Johnny Roos, he built a new home, but I don't mean that one.
The old home.
The old home.
Yes.
Well, it was down off of the, well, when you can come down from that home there, you get down on that road that leads to Worship. Right
Main
where
Street.
The Legion Club is now,
yes.
I think our home was at one time right there.
Okay.
Right, well, in that, near that vicinity there, it couldn't have been much, maybe one way or the other. It may be in the exact spot where the Legion Club is right now. See, how do you say that?
Any mailbox?
That's all of it. When the blast furnace shut down, well, then they start getting rid of it. Well, they tore down the blast furnace. They had given it up. They wanted to start it up. But then the county commissioners, they said, oh, cost too much money, but actually they'd have been in better shape. That blast furnace was in better shape than the ones that are still in Youngstown at that time. See, it was during the Depression.
Yeah.
And nobody worked. So they sold it to the commissioners. One of the commissioners was Conrad Bird. They used to call him Cooney Bird. In fact, he used to have Burke's Pretzels. He used to be.
No kidding.
Yeah.
He was a county commissioner.
He was a county commissioner, and I think he was one of the main things turned it down at the time. I think it cost around $90,000 to start it up again. I forget what it was. He got them out, but you just put it. They wanted to start, but they had backed out. They didn't want to do it, so they tore it down and sold it to a scrap. What was it? Number Lions, Jew. Sold for scrap.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful furniture. Day one condition. It hadn't been too long. Long before they had put new boilers there. New boilers for the furnace.
In other words, just before the Depression.
Yeah.
They put the boilers
in. That's when they put the boilers in. Then that was it. Then they, it seemed like they enjoyed themselves more. The youngsters, they're always out playing this and that. We even played, oh, you remember, you heard of Doc Conrad?
Sure.
We used to have four, right across from, on this side of the mayor's office there, the community. Right here in town, the municipal building.
Okay.
On this side, McAuliffe's living there. Well, when we were all small, Doc Conrad, the former Doc Conrad, we used to have jumping stands? High jumping stands. Put one right off of the edge of the walk. Off the edge of the walk and part of the out towards almost to the, well, let's see how big we were there. Anyway, we used to have sports. We used to jump over, see who could jump the best, and then we even had some of the tenants that used to board, were living with the McAuliffe's. At that time, Sally McAuliffe's mom, she had two boarders. Well, they used to work, be employed at the furnace. So any evening after work, they'd all get together, try to jump over this, the high, on these high jumping stands. Then we used to take, we used to run. Doc Conrad and me and Kenny Coots and Jerry Valtampo and several of us used to run from there, from the municipal building, clear out to past where these, past the coke ovens. You know where the coke ovens are?
Sure.
Way out there, past the, I think the building's still there. Coots, it used to belong to it. Let's cross from where Sears, Wilbur Sears.
I know, anyway.
We used to run out to there and back with Doc Conrad. Oh, we used to have more fun then. Now you don't have nothing. Now I don't know. I can't figure it out. This generation seems like they're all stuck on TV. They're inside. They're afraid to move. They all have cars. They won't walk. They always like to ride.
What a TV.
Then they wonder why they're in ill health. Yeah, that's, and the another thing I think is the food. The food has a lot to do with it. A lot of this ill health is going on too. They contaminate. They put bad damn all your preservatives and stuff like that. That's no good.
Did you eat more fresh food then?
Oh yes, we always ate fresh food. Fresh food and your parents did it. Cooked it.
Huh?
Not out of the cans. Here, all you have to do now is they eat it out of cans. And have to put preservatives in order to maintain it, right?
Yes.
That's why. Yeah, I never heard of this cancer business. My God Almighty, I never heard of anything like it. Like it. Now, about every other one has cancer. And they live to a ripe old age, too, them old timers. They work like mules. I used to go in the back of the coke ovens and watch these men draw coke by hand out of the oven. Mind you, that's with a big long bar.
I saw a picture of one.
Did you?
Okay, yes. Now they pulled that out of there, they scraped it out of there like into what? Cars?
Yes, in little cars. Oh, they used to have a wheelbarrow.
Okay.
And with the wheelbarrow, then they'd haul it out to, see, there's a, if you notice in the back here where the Erie Railroad, they used to bring the cars up in through there, up in between the
coke ovens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so with the wheelbarrow, they
dump it off into
the cars.
Well, was that stuff red hot?
Yes. Well, no, they here, it was still hot.
Uh-huh.
But before they draw this coke, they come in the morning about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. They used to call them. They have a big long pipe, water pipe was what it was, with a hose on it, and they'd water the coke. Get the fire, and put it out.
Like, okay.
That's how it developed. That's why they call the coke. It was coal, actual coal that was burning. So when they put while it was burned down to a certain extent, well then they come up and water it. That is to put the fire out. And then after all the fire is out and everything's settled, then they put it off.
I wondered how they did that.
That's how they did it. Well, I used to watch everything. Oh, and then how they made the iron. I still just remember this. How they used to have it, it's on the order of, on the order of, you know, all right, what the heck was it? What'd they call that? I can't recall now what they call that. Shoot. They used to have some kind of machinery. It's like on the order of an elevator, going up the long stack. And then with that, they dump. I don't know what it was, four, well, anyhow, in order to make this iron. And then they'd have oh dear. See, I was just a youngster then, and watching making, but I can't recall very well how. I knew how they made it, but I can't explain it because it's they.
I understand it's been a long time ago.
Yeah, well, that's what they used to call it. They used to have this, what they called the red ore. Red ore, they used to use it for making iron.
Was that the kidney ore? Did you ever hear that term, kidney ore?
No, but that probably refers to the same thing.
It was good ore.
Good ore, yeah. And that's how they did it. And then they had, when it was all ready, when they'd pour, you'd see, they'd have open this, what the opening was on one of these stacks. Anyhow, they let the molten iron come out into these forms, what they call the
piglets. No.
Well, I mean this machinery, like it was, it was like an escalator,
huh?
But the size of pig irons, you know, the molten iron, it pour off into these molds.
Okay.
And they had it on this chain
like a conveyor.
Conveyor. And by the time it got up to the end of the conveyor, it was cooled off with it and dumped off into the car.
Right into the railroad car.
That's what they did with it.
How big were those? Could a man lift one?
Yes. I imagine, you know, if they'd ever go down there with somebody, they claim there's God knows how many. I forget. They buried quite a few of them.
Just to get rid of them?
Yes. At one time, they claimed there was a big pile of it buried underneath there someplace. But then you see that's... Then at the end of that, on up beyond the blast furnace was the slag dump, where they used to dump the slag from the furnace.
Mm-hmm.
They used to take it on up, and then you up above they had the, what they call that, the standard slag. They called it the standard slag. It had machinery there to crush the slag,
mm-hmm.
make slag.
Look where Gurley is at now. Isn't Gurley in that stack slag pump?
Yeah, that's his place. Well, they used to see that used to be the dump from the furnace.
Yeah,
they used
the
to
waste
dump it there.
Yeah,
waste. That were the waste.
Now they're selling.
And now beyond that was the regular standard slag, the machinery and everything, right then, what the hell they call that? When they used to make it, anyhow, they had the machinery to make the slag, and then when they had the slag made, they put dump. They saw to it that it was dumped into cars the same way, because you had they had access to the railroad.
Right there.
And the railroad would just ride alongside of it. They'd just leave the cars right there.
All by railroad, not by
all
truck.
All railroad. The only thing was by, what did they, the coke ovens, they used to have a horse drawn. They used to have horses. Three or four. What did they haul with that?
Did they haul coal into the coke ovens with them? I've seen pictures of horses and wagons that look like coal chutes. Tipples, like a coal tipple.
Oh, well, wait a minute. I don't... I don't know how they did it. I don't know what them horses, I can't recall that. But I know they used to have a little, they used to call it the, you know, what's the big thing? They used to have a little, it's like a little trolley. They called it a trolley.
Mm-hmm.
It had a railroad, a little, just a small narrow gauge rail on top of your ovens.
Okay.
And on top of the ovens, and then this little trolley had cars alongside of on the end of it, pull them up, and they were full of coal, and they just this little trolley take them along and dump them into the
top of the oven.
On top of the ovens, that's how they dump the coal into the ovens.
Okay, they dumped the coal in the top from the Smithfield Gauge Railroad, and then a later period they pulled the coal out, the coke out from the bottom.
That's right.
How long did it take, you know, from the time it went in to the time it was done?
That I'm not sure. I know someone who would know, and my cousin.
Well, it's probably not really important. Tell me a little bit about your mother. You mentioned your dad.
My mom, well, she, I can't tell you much about her. I know she was busy. She always, she took care of us. All she did was cook, and she made sure that we had food. And my dad was the same way on that order. But, you know, during the Depression, it was pretty rough. So we had this, what do you say, what would you say, skimp. We were hard up, but we managed to make a meal. I always say, as long as we had some potatoes and beans and stuff like that at home.
You worked it out.
She worked it out, but she always managed to, I never remember having missed a meal.
Okay.
She managed to get, even though we didn't have nothing but that.
Were they strict parents?
No, my God, they weren't strict enough. Some of them, you know, they were too good. They were too good for their own good.
Good people.
Yes. They both ended up dying. They both died of brain tumors.
Oh, that's too bad.
That's something, it's unusual. We had Doc Beaver was our family doctor at that time, when he first started practicing.
Long time ago.
And he had, I had my dad, he was complaining about a headache, this and that. So Doc Beaver, he couldn't figure out it either. He said, well, he called us doctor, a neurosurgeon from, made him come down from Cleveland and check him over. Dr. Carnash was his name. And he come down from Cleveland, checked him over, brain tumor, couldn't do anything about it. And my mother ended up the same way in 1940. She had a brain tumor, and she died from it.
Did they die young?
Well, my dad was 67, my age now. My mom was 55.
Okay. Well, that's young today, but
yeah.
Then that might have been more close to the average.
Well, my dad worked all his life. My mom did the same thing. She, you know, raising a family is rather difficult,
yeah.
Especially seven children. Now they try to get along with one or two, maybe three of them, the new generation,
yeah.
If they're doing that anymore. I don't think it'll go beyond that.
Your dad worked at Cherry Valley up until it closed?
He worked at the coke ovens all his life.
Okay, what do you remember about him working at the coke ovens? Did he ever talk about it? Did he like working there?
It isn't whether he liked it. He had no other choice. You see, when they came over, he wasn't the... A lot of your immigrants that come over, they didn't know anything. So, they put labor. And you recall, read up on all those immigrants, and they were that immigrated, they went to new life. For example, they got off the port of New York. I don't know what had happened, how they, but they couldn't do a thing. They didn't know nothing new, what to do.
Uh-huh.
They didn't know, they had no trade, no nothing or something. What were they, all they had to do was get a job, labor. That's what they were doing, laboring. They didn't know any better.
Okay, now, he got from New York to here. Were there men who would go to New York and hire the immigrants and bring them here?
I can't tell you. I don't even remember how he got to this town.
Okay.
I don't know why, but I imagine, though, this district, see, this district was really the industrial district, Youngstown, Pittsburgh. It seemed like they all... They were all situated around this district here, no matter what.
Now,
from one friend to another, that's how they...
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
Now, I talked to someone that knew about the McKeefrey Mill, and he said that they'd go to New York and they would in other words, let's say McKeefrey had work to be done in New York.
Yeah.
He would hire somebody, like he would hire John Smith to do the work, and John Smith would go to New York and get 10 or 12 immigrants and bring them back to do the work.
Right. See, that's right. There used to be another blast furnace. I think there were two down there. I don't know if they were there.
I think there were.
There were two. See? Miltonia was they used to call it the biggest little town in the state of Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Because of the industry.
He called the man, Padre, or he had a word that he called this man that would go to, in other words, it was like a term in Italian. He was like the man who brought the immigrants in. Padre, or, oh boy, I can't think of the word now. You're not familiar.
Was that his name?
No, it was like a term, like Godfather. I think it meant Godfather.
How would you call a person that usually go and run, like, for example, like you run an errands, go to a certain place, like you went to New York for the McKeefries and...
A messenger?
No, it's an Italian term.
In Italian, how would you say...
No, something like Padre, Padre.
What?
Oh,
boy.
Padrone
means the owner of something.
Okay, well, that's the term that he used. He said that somebody would go to New York and bring back maybe 15 immigrants to do work, whatever had to be done.
Yeah, but these people didn't use the Italian language.
No, they
was a slang. Padrone means
padrone
means I own something. See, the owner of a shop, a store.
Okay.
I am the owner.
Okay.
But I don't know. But those people, those immigrants,
almost all the immigrants that come here, they spoke dialect.
Okay.
That's why they never spoke the real Italian.
See, when I came here, I didn't even understand.
Okay.
Some
in other words, different parts of Italy have different types of Italian.
Yes.
Italian is one.
Yeah.
It's dialect.
The different dialects.
It's almost like West Virginia compared to here.
Yeah,
you have a different way of talking.
That's what it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But they were you know, because I spoke the dialect too. I was brought up originally by my parents. They were born in the lower part of Italy, the southern part of Italy, where right in fact across from the Sicilian mainland.
Calabria, you know.
Yes.
Calabria.
Yes.
Well, they. What was I going to say?
They spoke slang. Didn't speak the.
They all spoke slang. It's all the slang, and they don't. They correct Italian. And they didn't know. When I went over to Berlitz School to study Italian, studying languages, I started. Well, they didn't know what I was talking about.
Was that during the war?
Yeah, right after the war.
Right after the war.
I went over there under the GI Bill, and that's where I met my wife.
I see.
So I went to the Berlitz School. What I knew in Italian, what my parents taught me, and what I picked up from them, they couldn't figure it out. Maybe some word now and then, because of the dialect. See? Then I got to speaking, I became the real Italian. It's beautiful, really. I mean, you can't beat it. But it took me 2 years. But I started
speaks
off.
In Italian just like an Italian.
No.
He speaks Italian just like beautiful.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm forgetting. I don't practice it. And I took French too. 2 years of French. And I'd taken 3 years or 2 years over here in high school. Well, I loved languages. Then I started on the German. Then I met my wife. Goodbye, languages.
No, I don't believe that.
Yeah, we met in school.
She was going to school. That's how I met her. I met her at the Berlitz. Oh my!
Your father then,
Joseph.
It was the Cherry Valley. The Coke ovens was just a job, not one that he particularly liked.
No, it was
real hard work.
Hard work. Yeah, it was hot too. He used to work. At the Coke ovens, they also had a Coke drawing machine. A machine, a person couldn't. The only ones that they used in the back end were a machine, the Coke drying machine couldn't get back in the back, what they used to call the backyard.
Okay.
See, there were, I don't know how many ovens, there may have been around.
Counted about 80.
No, just in the backyard. It's that one little sector.
Okay.
There weren't very many there. But, and the only way they could get them, the Coke out of them ovens, is have a person draw by hand.
Uh-huh.
But,
the whole row, they had a machine. Before you come to the backyard, you see they start up in the southern end here. And they had a machine right there. Go up, they had two machines, in fact, one of each. They had two rows of Coke Islands.
They faced each other.
Yeah, they faced each other. But then they still had two on the other side.
On the other side, okay.
That's four. So they had a machine on each side, go along there. It's handled by a man, the operator. He had handled this machine and just put this, I imagine it was electric anyway, to get this long, how would they call that? It was just like an arm. You just go right in the oven and then
pull it out.
Pull it right out. It pulls the coke out with it.
I think I've seen pictures of that too.
Did you?
Yeah.
See? And that's how they used to get the coke out. With the exception of the few that are in the back, they had to have men do that. And men, I'm telling you, they had, yeah, it was really rough. And my dad, he was working alongside, you see, my dad, he was working, they used to say, working after the machine. Follow the machine. He was right behind it. After done with drawing the coke out, mm-hmm. he'd keep cleaning up right behind the machine. See, whatever.
In other words, anything that fell off the machine.
That's what he was doing.
Could he go from the coke ovens into the mill itself?
No.
I mean, was the coke oven, was that the worst job in the place? Is that where the newest immigrants started to work?
Well, let's see. Well, the coke oven, I can't tell you. You see, they had a lot of them working in the blast furnace, but the majority of the coke ovens was the dirtiest. I think that was the roughest job.
Could a man normally move from the coke ovens to the blast furnace? Was that?
Well, it depends on if they wanted to, or if they had the opportunity to get there. If they didn't like it, and they had an opening, I imagine they could get it.
But your dad,
it's all the same company.
Your dad didn't move. He stayed at the coke ovens the whole time.
That's all he did.
Did he have 20 or 30 years in there?
Well, let's see. When did it go down?
About 31 or 32, I think.
Well, no. The Depression was in 29.
Yeah.
That's it.
I thought it ran for, maybe it was McKeefry's, it ran for a little while.
No, McKeefry's blast furnace, it was out of there for way before the one on the north over here, the Cherry Valley. Grafton was the McKeefry's.
Okay, it went out before the one in Cherry Valley.
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Then the other, so the coke ovens, they were completely out by 29. That's when the Depression was.
Okay, it started in 29.
So my dad, well, you figure out, I was born in 14. 14, well, I don't know exactly how many years they were in operation.
You don't know when he started working?
No, I don't know. I think my cousin would know, because his dad worked there too. His dad used to, come on in and look out.
I
think it's Al.
No, it's not.
I think it is. Oh, Lesher.
Go ahead, if you have to.
No, that's all right.
He was there at least from the time you were born until 29. At least 15 years.
Yeah, I know that for a fact. See, my first cousin, Sambo Temple.
Would that be Jerry's dad?
Jerry's brother. Big Jerry's brother. Now, there's two Jerry's.
Yeah, the one would be about my
age. There's three Jerry's.
The one's a bus driver.
Well, that's my cousin's son.
Okay, I would want to talk to Jerry, the bus driver's dad.
Jerry, the one that has the pool, the recreation down there by Blackwoods.
Okay.
That's my first cousin. And his brother lives on Pine Street, right below.
Where from Francis Perry?
Right down below Francis Perry's, okay. Second house below his.
Jerry Bell Temple.
That's Sam.
Sam, I'd want to talk to Sam.
You talk to him and he'll give you all the dope you want as far as the furnaces, because he used to have the horse and buggy, the horse and, I wouldn't call it a buggy.
It's a wagon?
It was a two-wheeler. It was a heavy stinker. And he used to, I know he used to haul stuff. I don't recall now what they hauled there. Either they hauled trash, I don't know whether they haul stuff away or clean place up or what. But you go to him, he'll give you most all the dope you want as far as the furnace and coke on.
Okay, I'll keep his name in mind.
He's home because he isn't able to do much walking. He's in that trouble. But you go see him, I think he'll like it. You could get a lot of dope on that.
Tell me about the Great Depression. What do you remember about that? You said hard times. Was there anything good that came out of the Great Depression?
Any good?
Yeah.
I don't know what you call good.
Did you work at all during the Depression?
Yeah. Well, they had what they called the Works Progress Administration. What was it? WPA?
WPA.
So I filled in for my dad because he wasn't able. There was something wrong with his hand, so I filled in for him. There used to be a wino railroad.
Okay.
Now, beyond here, down here by the... this first bridge out of town going toward on Lisbon Street, the first of that bridge there, over to the left of the bridge. A swamp, but there used to be a Y&O and a big bridge where the Y&O, the Youngstown, Ohio Railroad, used to go from to Lisbon, East Lisbon. Well, there used to be, they used to have this, it wasn't there anymore. Anyhow, we were getting all this, it's not slag. It was stuff that they used to fill in roads and holes and stuff like that. I don't know what they had that, what they made that, what that was. It was the foundation where the railroad was on.
Okay, ballast. They call it ballast?
I don't know what they call it, the foundation. It was it was good foundation material for roads and stuff like that. So that's what I used to do. I worked for my dad, and I used to work for him and shovel all this stuff on the trucks, and they used to haul it away and bring it out in the country roads and fill in and all. And I worked for him over at Firestone Park. Columbia.
On the WPA.
Yeah, that's when they have built up Firestone Park too.
Okay. Now the slag pile you mentioned, was that, that's right over?
It wasn't slag. It wasn't slag. It was over here though.
Okay, you actually dug it over there.
Then we dug it all out.
And did you load it onto the railroad cars?
No, they
the trucks.
Have trucks.
Okay.
They have trucks.
Was that where the wooden trestle was at? I've seen pictures of a big wooden bridge.
That's it.
But that was right over there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right
up there where Pizzo's live. Behind where Pizzo's live?
Pasco's.
Pizzo.
I don't know who lives there. I don't know right now.
There's a big yellow brick house there up on the hill.
Oh, now wait a minute.
Am I in the wrong place?
Anybody wants this table?
Nah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's...
Okay, on the ferns. He'd know more about the ferns.
Oh, he knows a lot about it.
Okay, you worked at WPA during the war, or during the Depression.
Right.
And did you get drafted during the war?
They were drafting them all. They were drafting quite a few of them. It seemed like I was being ignored. I get tired waiting, so I went and told the, used to be Mellinger, Greeny Mellinger.
Uh-huh.
You know his name?
I know the name.
Wilbur, but they used to call him Green. He was the one that took care of these for the inductees.
Uh-huh.
He used to send them out then. So I told him that. In fact, his brother, Ed Mellinger, he lives up here on the mail carrier's husband.
Okay.
He and I were inducted together. We went up to Akron. That was August 15th, 1942.
Okay, you weren't being called, so you went and told him.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't like to be keep waiting around. That's what happened.
Things have changed.
Yeah. I wanted to get out, so they saw to it. I volunteered because I don't know whether I'd be called, how soon it would have been, but I just wanted to expedite it, hurry up.
You wanted to get going.
Get going. And from there, we're inducted, ended up in Columbus. Columbus?
Yeah, but the other one was,
Fort Benjamin Harrison. And from Fort Harrison, you got the MPs, and from Fort Harrison to Fort, Fort Riley, Kansas.
Huh.
And then from there, where did I get to there? To Fort Knox. And Fort Knox, I think that's where I stayed until we left for overseas. Back in 1943, I think. I went to Camp Shanks, New York, to England. That's when we went overseas. It took us 13 days. English boat. Called it the Duchess of Richmond. Oh, that stinking thing. Food was terrible. Everybody getting sick. Oh, my God. Everybody was sicker than a dog. That's something that never bothered me. I never got sick. I used to eat crackers, and I'd have Lifesavers. These others, poor people, poor guys. They
hey,
just
want
their guts out.
I don't remember. After the kiss in the middle was 2 feet out straight.
Across the hall.
Oh,
the
okay.
Old school.
Yeah.
And she all, you know, with the teaching them girls how to bake it, and she'd come across and bring cookies over to the...
She'd take care of you.
Take you, the coach. No, I love woodworking. I just love woodworking. Can do everything you like.
Tell me about the Italians as far as their treatment went. The people that were here. I'll tell you what. I'll leave that one another minute. How was it? Do you remember them being because you were Catholic and because you didn't speak, like you said, they didn't speak the language.
The older generation, I think you contact Sammy. He'll tell you more about them.
Well, tell me, I don't know if I have a chance to. Tell me, can you tell me anything about the way they were treated? Do you remember yourself being treated differently because you were Italian?
No, I don't. Well, the only thing I remember, the north side, we were most of the Italian people who lived in the north side of town. This side... The north side, we crossed the railroad.
Yes, okay.
This side is the south side. Well, most of your Italian class was over on the north side. It seemed like they couldn't hit it.
Couldn't hit it off right?
No, they weren't the type of the mix. I mean, they weren't too sociable, the south side and the north side.
No, the Irish were down in Grafton.
And the Irish were down in Grafton, but after so many years, though, there weren't too many Irish left. The old timers, that's why I say you should contact somebody, some old timer.
See, I had you figured as an old timer, but you're not.
No, I'm not an old timer.
Where were the Italians concentrated at over there? If the Irish were in Grafton.
Well, you had Italians in Grafton, too.
Okay. In other words, the people who tended to work around the furnaces lived in Grafton.
Not necessarily, no.
No?
No.
Maybe because the Irish were Catholics. All the Catholics were mostly this side.
At the turn of the century, I imagine.
Over here,
they were
the Protestants, because most of the Protestant churches are over here.
Well, the Italians were mostly Catholic.
Yeah, and the Irish.
And the Irish.
And the Polish.
So they tended to live around their church, which was over in Grafton.
Yes. That's why, not because...
But they never could get along anyhow. I mean, the children, like our generation...
I don't want to hear about that because I get upset. I don't like it.
No, not because of the Italians.
I know. That makes me so sick when people...
Friction.
There
was friction between the Catholics and stuff, I guess.
There was friction.
Yeah, there was a little friction.
Because that's stupid. Because
that's right,
the Italian people gave their civilization to the world. Then you come here, for example, stupid people, and they treat the Italian people their way. I think that's stupid. Because the most of the beautiful art, music, and civilization, where do you go? In Italy.
Okay, now one other question I want to ask you. Well, two more things, and I'll leave it alone. The black can.
That is something you...
Is that something you don't want to talk about?
I don't know too much, but that's why I said Sam. He knows a lot about that. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what.
Okay.
My uncle. His name was Guido. He was killed by what they called the Black Hands.
Was he killed here in Laetona?
Yeah.
He was murdered?
He was going out along the railroad track, out the West End, out towards, we used to call it the Rock Cut.
I know where that's at. Right on the railroad track.
They shot him. They cut his throat and laid him across the railroad. That was the year I was born. New Year's Day, 1914.
Okay.
The train come by, picked him up, took him to the morgue and saved him, and died up there.
And what was the Black Hand?
That I can't tell you. That, I don't know much about it. They're just in some organization. I don't know whether they... I don't know. Sam can explain it better because he was older. He was in that...
Were there Italians in the Black Hand? I understood it was like like a group of Italians.
So they claim that they were most of all Italians. Italian race.
Okay. Did they tend to look out for the Italians? I mean, there was a Ku Klux Klan, wasn't there?
No, the Ku Klux Klan, I recall that, too. That was back in... But that was... I was still living in a red row.
But that was anti-Catholic, anti-immigrant.
Yeah, you're Ku Klux Klan.
Okay. No, was the Black Hand like a response to that?
That I can't say because I don't know. I don't know for sure whether that was... Had anything to with that to combat?
Yeah.
The Ku Klux Klan? I can't tell you. I don't know.
Your uncle was killed. Your uncle was an Italian. But you don't understand. I'm confused by that.
Sam Botepo. He's my cousin, first cousin.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry is too big. Jerry. His mother, their mother, was my dad's sister.
Okay.
And the one who was killed. It was my dad's brother.
The other brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's...
They tell me years ago the Guidos were no one to fool with.
Oh, I'll tell you, no, my brother, the oldest brother, he died of cancer. He wouldn't take no good from anybody. He was big. He weighed 207 pounds, big, my God, he made two of me. But then when he died of cancer, he had lung cancer, he died. He's down to about 130 pounds.
Jeez.
Suffered for a couple of years.
Did the Italians tend to stick together? I mean, if one person had trouble with, say, other people here in town, if one Italian had trouble, did you tend to stick together? Were you pretty close in your neighborhood?
Yeah, they were, the Italians, they were all, they were sociable. Years ago, everybody was sociable, see?
But I mean like with the Protestants, the people on the south side. You lived on the north side, you were Italian.
Yes.
How about on the south side? Did you ever have trouble coming over here? Did they ever tell you to get the hell out? They didn't want you around here?
No. That's something I never recall.
It was never...
But they weren't too friendly.
Okay.
The north side with the south side. They weren't too friendly. Well, I imagine it was the different religions.
And do you think maybe before your time, things were worse? Do you recall?
No, I wouldn't think.
No?
I wouldn't think so.
In other words, you lived through what you think was the worst time as far as the groups getting along, and you don't think it was too bad?
No, it wasn't too bad, because, you see, we had in school, I had all the, most of them were, I had a few from here on the south side. Carol Davis and there was a lot of them. We got along good in school.
And yet they were from the south side, and you were from the north side.
See, I attended the Catholic school for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic school.
St. Pat's.
Well, I went there in 1925. Graduated 28th from there, went up to the north side. Well, that's where Jonesy lives now. That school used to be there.
Oh, okay.
Bill Jones, the old high school. And so in the new school, I didn't get to go to the new school. I graduated from the old high school.
Okay, you must have just missed the new school. What was Laetona like during the 40s and the 50s? What kind of a time was it? I mean, before the Depression, it was an industrial time.
Right.
Tell me about Laetona during the 40s and 50s.
The 40s and 50s, I can't tell you, because most of them were away in the service.
Okay, you were here during the 50s.
in the 50s, yeah.
Always a friendly town?
Yeah, it is. It was a friendly town.
How about delivering mail? You delivered mail for over 30 years.
Yeah, and a lot of friends. I miss it. I love it. I like the outside quite a bit. And I met a lot of people. They were very friendly with me. And I treat them like a brother or sister.
Tell me about the things you did for them.
You read that in the paper. I don't want to say it again.
No. Well, let's skip that episode.
Huh?
Well, just tell me about some other things that happened to you over those years of delivering mail in the economy. Some nice things.
I don't know what to tell you.
What's your fondest memory? If I ask you to pick one thing out of it, if you look back over your career of carrying mail, what was the nicest thing that happened to you?
I can't, but I said they all treated me well. They all treated me real good, and that, I can't explain it.
Okay.
I can't explain it. I really can't. Oh, I had a lot of disappointment. I felt hurt when you stop and talk to some of them day after day after day, and then suddenly that's like at one. Miss Shintz used to be the home ex teacher. She used to get the Cleveland paper every day. Yeah, I'd hardly see her every day. And I'd see her outside. I'd help her outside. Sometimes I'd give her a cane. I was out in the cold, you know. Leave her alone. I'd help her out. Yeah, 3-4 days, the newspapers back of the door. You know, they had a slot in the door, but wouldn't fit. They'd put back of the door. She'd always stay down. She never went anyplace. Mm-hmm. Outside of going to get downtown for groceries. 3 days passed, no, the paper's still there, so I'm going to call Jackie Woods. Because once in a while she used to go over there, I imagine, babysit. Jackie over. I told him, I said, Jackie, a machine. I don't think she's gone anywhere. There's something wrong. So I broke the door down, broke it open, couldn't get in, wrapped the door, and the response was, yeah, there she was, laying on the floor. She had a scope.
Uh-huh.
Took her to the hospital. She was still alive. Took her to the hospital, she died. Another one, used to be the organist down at the Catholic Church, the same way. I stopped in on her. She was up in the years, too. Drop in. I'd always ask these older people, you know, how they're getting along, make sure there's nothing wrong with them. I stop in. A couple of days later, I could get no response from her. And pretty soon I hear her calling. She had fallen. She was in the kitchen, she had fallen, broken a hip, and she died.
She laid there for a couple of days.
I think so. That's the only thing I didn't like about the mail carrier. Something should happen, I don't like to see that. It moved me, you know. I feel sorry for him. Yeah. That's about it. The rest is all right. I love it. I love the outside.